Run! Go! Get to the jibber jabber!
Welcome, welcome to episode 75 of the Jibber Jabber podcast, where this week we decided to do something just a little bit different. This week, J-Mac and I are going to, well, we have already watched two movies that are ranked on Rotten Tomatoes, as the worst sequels of all time. So I'm just going to tell you now, my selection chosen by J-Mac was Jaws 4, The Revenge. And for J-Mac, he got the pleasure, the absolute pleasure of watching Highlander 2, The Quickening. So today we're going to chat about The Quickening, Highlander 2, and Jaws 4, The Revenge. So the first half of the episode, it'll be J-Mac. We'll kind of talk a little bit about his experience watching The Quickening. And then for the last half of the show, it'll be myself and my recent experience of rewatching yet again Jaws 4, The Revenge. Make sure you guys are liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter. Make sure to go ahead and hit that subscribe button that you can see just below us. If you're listening to this on MP3, on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, anywhere that basically says podcasts on the app, you're listening to us, maybe you should check us out on YouTube, because you can see us, and sometimes it's just a bit more personal and a little bit more funny when you can actually see the fella that you're listening to, or woman. But we'll leave that to your imagination. J-Mac, how's your week? You been all right?
It's not too bad, man. This is the final week of fun and debauchery before going back to work after the festive period. So the last couple of days have been a bit of a downer, just because I know it's coming. I know it's time to kind of get back to the grind. But good start. I bet me knows it's time to go back now, but I just don't want to.
That's why I'm here this week, to kind of take your mind off the shenanigans of the outside world. But this is 2021. This is the year that's going to be better for everyone. And what better way to start the year off than to do this bloody episode?
than to watch two of the worst sequels in history. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think it was an awesome idea, because it was mine. I'm looking forward to it. I found when I was watching my film of choice, which was Highlander 2, I found myself laughing at how bad it was, but it wasn't in a fun way. I just couldn't believe it had the kind of gumption to do that.
The audacity.
The audacity. Yeah, which is a very good fucking sound editing program. So I'm looking forward to getting in it.
Yeah, I mean, it is it's quite a shame that, you know, Highlander itself was such a masterpiece, to then kind of be forced to take that and do something like this with it. But we'll let you get into that. So just going to kind of introduce the movie. So Highlander 2, The Quickening was made in 1991, the year that I was born. So the year I was born, the very same year, these guys were making Highlander 2. Russell Mulcahy. I mean,
it's something that I've never actually heard his name said out loud, but I believe, looking at it, it's Mulcahy.
Mulcahy.
Russell Mulcahy. It's a very Irish sounding name. Russell Mulcahy. We'll go with that. In fact, just for the rest of the podcast, we'll just call him Russell McDonald, just to make it easy.
Why not Russell McLeod or the Clan McLeod? The budget for this picture was actually 30 million. And just to kind of create a bit of background, Highlander 1 was a huge success. People loved it. A bit of a cult at first, but it was original, and people loved the story. So the studios were like, right, we need a sequel, so we're going to throw money at it. And the writer, I think this wasn't the same writer that made the second one. He wasn't up for doing another one. And they basically threw money at it. Were like, well, you don't have a story for the second one, write one. And that's when they went to like some nursery and asked children to they asked some children to write the story for it.
Greetings, Highlander. You called?
So the movie made 15 million in return after it spent 30 million to create it. So it's been a bit of a stinger. And for the life of me, I can't really think as to why that was the case. But one thing I will say as well is Sean Connery is back after being dead in the first one. And I think the reason they brought him back was because Christopher Lambert only accepted to do the movie if they brought back Sean Connery, which cost them $3 million, by the way.
3.5. And by the way, the budget was only $14 million, but through Argentinian corruption, it ended up at $30 million.
Yeah, that's right.
The story behind this film is hilarious. Now, we'll give pinpoints of it, but once you're finished watching this, go and look at it for yourselves, because the story behind the making of this film is such a fucking nightmare that Freddy Krueger would have run away from it. Honestly, this film is just... Woo! there's no other word for it than woo!
So what we'll do is we'll just go for it now. J-Mac, you've rewatched the movie. For me, it's always been a movie I've kind of watched throughout my childhood. I own all the Highlander movies on DVD, VHS. They're a personal, absolute favourite of mine. So for yourself, how was it revisiting it? Let's take it through the movie, beginning, middle, end.
Right. So the thing, like what you were just saying about you being a big fan of all of them, I'm a huge fan of the first one. It does have its issues. It's not a perfect film by any means. It does have its problems, but it's a really good fun kind of movie to watch, and it's something that some of it doesn't kind of hold up today too well, but for the most part, it's still a decent film. This one, now, I remember seeing this for the first time when I was maybe 14 or 15, something like that. I think it was on VHS because the VHS release was the theatrical release. That was what they put on the VHS. Any DVD and Blu-ray release has been a recut. So there was differences between the one that I remember seeing and the one that we watched today. Now, for me, that's always a warning sign. Whenever there's so many different cuts of a film, it tells me that there was issues during production, and this film is no exception to that rule. So given the theme of this episode, which was terrible sequels, so this was the one that I chose for myself. I chose them both. I chose Kev's and I chose mine. I thought I'm gonna take the power here. I'm gonna use the quickening.
So you can raise the dead.
Yeah, exactly. But I did go into it with an open mind, right? I didn't go in saying I'm just gonna sit and slate everything about this film that I possibly can. I went in with an open mind and I thought, right, I'm going to look at the positives as well. So what I'm going to do, first I'm going to talk about the positives and then I'm going to go into the negatives. So the negatives. Right. Now, this isn't just a bad film, right? I've seen bad films before, bad films that are just cheap and nasty, like Slender Man or The Gallows and any other kind of awful new age found footage horror film. Just absolutely terrible. And there's bad films that are actually so bad that somehow they became masterpieces, like The Room or Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 or Troll 2. Films like that are just so bad that they're funny. This film's in its own league, right? I know it's hard for sequels to be as good as the original. I totally understand that. It's very rare for that to happen. It happened with films like Terminator 2, Aliens, and a film I just seen recently, which was Ouija, Origin of Evil, was actually better than the original. Now, this one was an insult to everybody involved in the original who were actually in this. No. And that's what really scares me about it, man. It's not like it was a whole new cast and director and writer. This was all the original people, maybe minus the writer, now that I've spoken to you about it.
Mm. Well, do you know, Christopher Lambert actually was so disgusted with the rewritten script that he wanted to drop out of the movie, but because of his contractual obligations, he couldn't.
Our contract's a bitch.
And he was like, I'm done with this. I want out. There can be only one. And
he should have said that. He should have said that and walked out the door with a light behind him. That would have been amazing.
No.
So, when it comes to Highlander, there can be only one. So Christopher Lambert is back as Conor McLeod, which was a welcome sight. I mean, he is Conor McLeod. There's no change in that.
And
late great Sean Connery is back as Ramirez, and Russell Mulcahy is back as in the director's chair. What the hell happened to this? That this should have been a good movie, and it just wasn't. So we'll talk about the production issues kind of later on, but let's just go with a rundown of the things that I found in the film that annoyed me, right? We are talking opening shot. Opening scene, I got annoyed, right? It's 2024. It's futuristic, right?
Was it not 1999?
No. 1999 was when The Shield was
launched. Right, sorry.
2024 was where the film starts. Right? Uh-huh. So it's a futuristic Highlander film, which immediately kind of puts me on the back foot a wee bit, because I prefer the Highlander to involve the present or the past. You know?
Not spaceships.
Big Braveheart fan. Right? So I like my Scottish history. So that put me on a bit of a back foot. But they had this long tracking shot, say, an opera performance, right? And it ends with the reveal of Connor McLeod sitting there watching this opera. Now, why were those shots so fucking long? I don't understand why that was so long. It was like this huge kind of build-up to show us Connor McLeod. I know he's in it. He's on the fucking poster. I don't need a slow reveal of Connor McLeod. I just don't need it. I mean, even like movies like Last Action Hero take the piss out of that sort of thing when it shows you like the Arnold Schwarzenegger reveal at the start where he's kind of walking over the roofs of the cars. You know it's going to be him.
Yeah.
You know, but they still feel this kind of anticipation that they need to build. Right, so I don't see the point in that long kind of, oh, what's going on shot? It's Connor McLeod, he's back. Then it starts jumping between the kind of the future to the past, to the future again. I've no issue with that. A lot of films do it.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what the hell was going on. In this cut of the film, he's an immortal for the past, just like in the first film, but in this distant past, somehow they've got machine guns.
Distant past.
Right? So they've got these machine guns in the past. They've got fucking time travel technology. So when is this supposed to have taken place? There's no explanation given for that. There wasn't a massive war that destroyed all the technology to date, blah, blah, blah. Nothing. Now, the reason for that is the original cut of the film explained to us that he and Ramirez are immortal aliens, right? That was the original cut of the film. They were supposed to be aliens that get exiled to Earth for treason from the planet Zeist.
So he knew Ramirez before he met Ramirez then?
Aye.
I am one for all Ramirez.
That's the point I'm getting to.
Now, did he not recognize him?
That's beyond...
I know, we got exiled together. Any chance you could train us? Because I've just found out that I'm like, I'm immortal.
Now, that's beyond ridiculous based on the fact that the first film made it clear that McLeod is a fucking Highlander, right? He was born in Scotland. He died a young age and came back to life because he was immortal, and that's why he got kicked out of his village. He didn't just show up in that village one day and then they all took him in and then kicked him out when they realised there was something off about him. He was always there. He was born there. He was born in 1518 in the village of Glenfinnan on the shores of Loch Shiel. That's told in the first movie, right? Right. Oh, man, I'm really...
No, it's not.
That alien idea was a stupid idea, right? Oh. And we'll talk about it more later on, I'm sure. But it's not as stupid as recutting the film to try and cover that bad idea up, right? We also get to meet General Katana. Is he Japanese? Is he fuck? He's a Canadian. Michael Ironside, right? Michael Ironside is an absolute legend. He's a great baddie for the 80s and 90s. His performance in this film is so out there that it might be the best thing about the film. But again, we'll get into that as it goes on.
Well, you see, Michael Ironside, actually, I've got a quote here from him, right? Michael Ironside recalled his experiences on the movie, and this is a quote. Yeah, listen, I hated the script. We all did. Me, Sean, Chris... We were all in it for the money on this one. I mean, I read it as if it had been written by a 13-year-old boy, but I'd never played a barbarian swordsman before, so this was my first big evil mastermind type. I figured if I was going to do this stupid movie, I might as well have fun and go as far over the top as I possibly could. All that eye rolling and foaming at the mouth was me deciding that if I was going to be in a piece of shit like that movie, I was going to be the most memorable fucking thing in it. And I think it succeeded.
It 100% did. And we'll talk about it more as this goes on a bit. Oh my God. So anyway, they get sentenced to exile to the future. Now they get to the future for treason, and basically their sentence is the plot of Highlander 1. Right, that's what they get sentenced to. They get sentenced to go to the future Earth, and they have to all fight each other to the death over time until there's only one left, and you can only die if your head gets cut off. Now, can their head only get cut off? Is that the only way they can die back then as well, or is that just some kind of wee thing they programmed into their exile? I don't know. Again, it's never discussed. So,
another thing, man. just to kind of, and this is just to bring in Highlander the source. I'll assume you've seen every other Highlander movie.
I've seen Highlander 3 and Endgame.
Right.
So, and I've seen most of the Highlander series. I haven't seen the source.
Right. So the source was the very last Highlander movie, right?
That makes sense. The source is the last one.
Right. Now get this, right? Get this. So in original Highlander, it's made clear that, well, we can assume that Connor's won because he ages in the second one. That was his prize. He gets to grow old now, yeah? Because he's aged in the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was never the prize, according to Highlander the Source. The prize is actually that you can now have a child.
Well,
in the source. So
I did read something that said that every other sequel ignored this one.
Yeah, do you know, that's probably why I like every other sequel better. Not to say that I hate The Quickening, just that I think there was more meat on the bone with the other ones. Three, maybe not so much. I loved Endgame. The source was all right. The TV series was my childhood.
Yeah. I mean, to talk about what happens, you say that he gets old, right? Now, that first reveal when it shows you him as an old man, to me, he didn't look like an old man. He looked like a young man that got stuck in a house fire. That makeup is dreadful, right? And his old man voice that he does, what is the prize? The prize is to get to grow old, get to have children, if you take the source, and laryngitis. I don't remember that in the first one. So you will get laryngitis, McLeod. it doesn't work that way. But yeah, his old man voice is it leaves a lot to be desired. Everything just sounds like this. He's just constantly trying to squeeze out a turd.
You know, the one great thing that you can't really take away from the second one is I'm going to the jukebox and then it's a kind of magic playing. Like the fact that they've got Queen still doing the music for Highlander 2, that's a positive, mate.
I think Queen were actually one of the bands that were actually really happy that anybody would use their music. I mean, I remember that when Wayne's World used their music without permission for Bohemian Rhapsody, they just used it. and then Mike Myers and the producers got a letter from Queen like a couple of weeks after the film came out. They were like, oh shit, here we go. And the letter said, thanks for using our song.
Yeah, because it charted. It charted after that.
Charted after that.
Yeah.
So I think that they were quite liberal with who they would let use their stuff.
Which is good for Highlander.
It's also the year that, in fact, I'm pretty sure this film came out just literally just after Freddie died as well. Mm. Which is kind of bittersweet. Or in fact, you know, it's just bitter. This is not a legacy for Freddie Mercury. Mm. So the storyline that this one goes with is that the ozone layer is knackered. There's no more ozone, right? So now there's a big electromagnetic shield protecting the world from the sun. Fair enough, right? Ozone was a huge thing in the early 90s. Never hear about it now.
Right.
Remember back when you were at school, there's a hole in the ozone layer. Stop using deodorant. That's all right. So you just want to sort of ming and the sun might actually not kill us. Or superb. So you never hear about that now. That's a bit weird. So there's a big bad corporation in charge of the shield. And McLeod was the one who kind of brought all the top scientists together using his mind. with the gift, the prize. He used the prize, which was to be able to use telepathy, and he brought all these world scientists together to come up with a shield. Now, I don't have any issues with a storyline. If you're going to set something in the near future, I genuinely didn't have any problems with that storyline. I really didn't. They could have done something decent with it. But there are the small group of people that don't think the shield is needed anymore, right? And they believe that the public are being lied to by the government and it's all just a big money-making scheme. They're a bit like flat earthers, but unlike flat earthers, it turns out that these folk are right. which gets revealed right at the end of the film, but hey-ho. So that's the basic plot. There's a big shield and there's bad guys and there's McCloud and the Katana. Blah, blah, blah. So the first thing Katana does is send the two bounty hunters for Suburban Commando back to kill McCloud. What were those two fucking guys?
That was a hoverboard. Those were hoverboards.
One of them was on a hoverboard. One of them was wearing the bat suit, flying about like a fucking action man. Honestly, man, these bad guys. Right. So he sends these two ridiculous guys back. The most annoying villains in history, by the way. Mm-hmm. They were so irritating. Like, I swear to God, whenever like one of them particularly just kept laughing all the time. Like, every time he laughed, I just wanted to rip my balls off and throw them at the screen. It tore me to bits, that stupid fucking laugh. Honestly, thank God McCloud gets rid of them really quickly. My thinking was if those were going to be like a couple of main kind of antagonists, I was going to have even more problems with this film because those two were an absolute pain in the hoop.
Jaxie.
Aye. So, obviously, it's the immortal thing, so you've got sword fights and blah, 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 blah. Does he cut their heads off? Yes. Does he do it with a sword? No. This is a stupid fucking sequel, so we need to be different. He cuts one of their heads off after flying about on a hoverboard. Not joking. Highlander has got hoverboards in it now, right? After flying about in one of them for a while, he cuts one of their heads off using a train and the other one's head off using electricity and a wire. Right. Now, I want to see sword fights. I want to see head chops with swords. You know what I mean? There's no point in overcomplicating the issue. I don't understand the thinking behind that. I just want to see heads coming off with swords. The way he killed them, to me, was just a slight inconvenience for commuters and homeowners. That's what he did there. So he kills the first annoying guy. The quickening comes and he de-ages. Somehow he becomes young McCloud again. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that ever happening in the first one to anybody. The quickening came and they got stronger and that was it. Now de-aging is a thing. I spent a good bit of time fiddling with the focus on my projector when I was watching this film, right? Because I thought the focus is off. Wasn't my projector. There's just loads of shots that are out of focus. This is so terribly shot. The ideas behind a lot of the shots are cool, but honestly, there was so many of them out of focus that what I ended up having to do was kind of pause the film, then mess about with the focus and go, it's never going into focus. And then find a scene where it is in focus and go, nah, it's just really badly shot. So, great work on the cinematography, whoever that was. It seems to me like this film just wanted to cash in on loads of things that were popular at the time.
Hoverboards.
Hoverboards. Like I seen different references to, I seen Robocop, I seen Blade Runner, I seen Back to the Future, I seen Mad Max, I seen Batman. The list would go on longer if I cared enough to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But it's just an absolute cash in on what somebody sitting at a desk somewhere thought was popular and thought people wanted to see in a Highlander movie. So after McCloud kills the second smackhead porcupine guy, he shouts out Ramirez's name and that brings him back to life. Grandad! Doesn't he work?
Why did he not just do that when they killed the Kurgan then? And bring him back in the first one?
Apparently, Clancy Brown was asked to reprise his role as the Kurgan in a cameo, and he said no. This is Clancy Brown. He wasn't exactly A-list at the time, and even he looked at that and went, No.
No wonder.
So that must be some new kind of quickening pish that came when they joined hands at the beginning and created a special bond that cannot be broken, even by death. Did you notice that? That's what he says at the beginning. It's so silly.
So he could essentially, why was he not in 3, 4, 5, 6? And, you know, why did he not just keep coming back?
He kept saying no, but 50 no's and a yes means yes.
Do you know what I mean? No, but like, with that logic, no one really stays dead. Because you then, don't you have to then take Ramirez's head again to then kill him?
Oh, but we'll find it later on.
No, but do you know what I mean? Like, by that logic, you've just brought back someone who's lost the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So does he get another chance at it again? So by that logic, you can get 4 people and be like, right, if one of us gets it, right, we just kill someone and we're back. And we're back. And the game would never end.
Do you know, if that was a rule for the beginning, it may have actually been quite cool.
Right, aye.
But it wasn't. The rule was, if your head comes away from your neck, it's over. That's the rule. That is the rule. God. You notice how well I know the first film, and yet I don't know the second film at all, apart from this recent viewing. That's the reason. The first one is good. This one is fucking rotten.
Yeah.
Then Virginia Madsen comes in. Now, she is a very, very pretty woman. I like Virginia Madsen. I'd put her up there with Meg Ryan. We spoke about Meg Ryan last week on Sleepless in Seattle, which was also a big pile of tripe. But she comes in. I did forget how pretty she was. She's a decent actress as well. She managed to kind of keep the flames at bay in this fucking dumpster fire. I did hear, though, that she did audition to play Heather in the original Highlander.
Oh.
And she didn't get the part, so she can't be that good. Anyway, she plays the main, what I would call, anti-shielder.
Sorry to interrupt you, right? But do you remember seeing the original Highlander? Connor's first wife is Mrs. Begg from Still Game. I'm like, fucking the dodgy old Mrs. Begg.
You fight with God on your side, Connor.
This is the ballad of Mrs. Begg. She doubted Winston's dodgy leg, but now she waits on him round the clock because she got fond of old Bert's cock.
We should come up with one for Connor. This is the ballad of Connor McLeod. He came back alive and he wasn't allowed. But now they've banished him from his tribe. Because what?
You nearly had it so well. You nearly did. Oh, man. In the first film, he could breathe like a fish, but in the second film, it's a big pile of pish.
Sorry for that. So, yes, continue.
So... she's the main anti-shielder who doesn't believe that the shield is required anymore. So she sees McLeod and the quickening and all that and him getting younger. And apparently she's into screaming in pain and weird lightning because that was enough to convince her to jump his bone right in the middle of the street.
I can't.
What the fuck was that about?
I know.
And then they introduced themselves.
You know what? I've sussed it. What it is, right, is he's not been able to get a boner for the last 70 years, right, because he could barely even speak, right? And then he used his telepathic mind control to be like, there can be only one.
So he brain-raped her.
It pretty much raped her, I think. I mean, well, let's put it up there, right? So there's that. What's the alternative that they just met and randomly fucked? Nah, he's got to have used the old telekinesis.
It was again just another ridiculous point of the film. There was no need for that scene to happen, and I don't know. I cannot fathom why that happened. There was no connection or chemistry between them that you would think it might happen. It was a case of you just got struck by lightning and got younger. You're getting boned. That's how that scene actually went. And then he introduces himself to her as Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod, which we've just established at the start of the film. He's not. He's Connor McLeod of fucking 1919 Machine Gun BC.
No, is it Zyth? Planet Zyth?
No, because that's not in this cut. They're not aliens in this one.
Right.
No, they're aliens in the VHS one, but not in any DVD or Blu-ray. And I watched the DVD. So, and they're still from Earth in this cut. This is how stupid and convoluted this film is. They've tried to correct the mistake in making them aliens by making them from further in the past when they had machine guns. I do not get it, man. It's fucking ridiculous. But let's move on, shall we? Let's go on to Ramirez now. Ramirez comes back, like we just said, because McLeod shouted his name. Now, we get some Sean Connery. Now, even though this film is fucking dire, he does still manage to be charming, right? There's no taking away from the fact that Sean Connery will own a scene whenever mm-hmm. he's on there. It's just what he does. He arrives in 2024 in Glencoe, and he quickly makes it clear that he's the comic relief of the film. He kind of unwittingly rips the piss out of people going around calling folk shitheads. Hello, shithead. And there is something funny about that. So I'll give the film 1 point back of the 1,046 that it's lost so far. So he walks past a mirror and sees that he's still wearing that red kind of Siegfried and Roy outfit for the first one. And he decides that he's going to try and blend in. So he goes to a traditional Scottish clothing shop to get himself kind of kitted out. And I swear to God, we get a pretty woman montage with Ramirez getting a fucking suit made for him. At that point, I nearly dove out of my brand new window. What is going on? And not only that, it happened with a William Tell overture playing in the foreground. I've never seen a more inappropriate use of that fucking tune. who decided that was a good idea?
It was ridiculous.
But it did look suave as hell in that suit that they made for him. Again, this is Sean Connery. Sean Connery can polish a turd. He is one of the only guys that can actually do it. And then we get more of Michael Ironside as General Katana. Now, he was outstanding. He's definitely the best thing in this entire film, right? Sean Connery followed very closely, but Michael Ironside as Katana, we spoke about it earlier, he does not give a shit about how hammy he was. He knew mm-hmm. this was utter crap, and he thought, fuck it, I'm getting paid, I'm going to have some fun. He's so over the top that it's actually brilliant. The scene where he arrives for the past on the train, another train, right? Not the same one that McLeod used to behead somebody at the beginning. This is another train. He arrives and says, ah, this doesn't look like Kansas. A reference to Wizard of Oz. Was that an in-flight movie in the circuits of time? How the fuck does he know what the Wizard of Oz is? Anyway. He arrives in this train. He says that quippy line. He then kills a guy somehow. I can't actually tell how he kills the guy because the scene is so poorly lit and badly shot that I can't actually work out what happened. He then goes into the cockpit of the train, and I think he kills the driver. He then ramps the train up to about 300 miles an hour.
Killing
everybody. Like, folk are flying around the train all over the place. It's like Total Recall when they smash the windows.
Yeah.
Right? Folk are flying. Honestly, there's a guy's eyes pop out as well, just like in Total Recall. This is going back to cashing in on what was popular at the time. Total Recall came out the year before and had Michael Ironside as one of the main bad guys.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, when he's in the cockpit making that crazy face, like, it's the craziest Chucky-looking face I've ever seen, right? It really is. But if you look behind him, they've left the door of the cockpit open and there's folk behind them like reading their paper. They're supposed to be flying about all over the place and there's folk behind them just like And then it's like they realise their mistake, so the next shot the door was closed. Nobody closed it. Honestly, the editing in this film is it's like they realised the mistake and then just shut the door. But I will say it was probably the most fun scene in the film. As stupid as it was really good fun. John C. McGinley, Perry Cox, is in this. Now, mm-hmm. he is just playing John C. McGinley. It's what he always does. I've never seen him play a character that was any different. Maybe Platoon, you could argue, but he's not in that very much. He's an absolute slimeball as the guy in charge of the company that is kind of running the shield. He doesn't get a lot of screen time, but he does kind of make a Perry Cox style impression when he's on there, and that smile. Do you know, he reminds me of Daniel Clamp from Gremlins 2. Hmm. See the guy that runs the big building that they're in?
Yeah.
I think it was played by Somebody Glover. Oh, I can never remember this guy's name and it annoys me. Anyway, just a cheesy big smile. He was in other stuff like Scrooged and things like that, and he's always like a cheeseball businessman.
Yeah.
Get, that's the kind of vibe.
You know, he actually, John C. McGinley, he said that in an interview that he tried to kind of model his voice like Orson Welles.
Aye. He said he tried to make his voice deeper.
Yeah, to kind of model himself off Orson Welles.
And he regretted it, I think. But to be honest, when I was watching it, I didn't notice it.
Mm.
So I don't know. Maybe his voice just isn't that deep, even if he tries.
Yeah.
So this is another kind of weird thing that we had going on. So apparently, Ramirez, Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, right? He's now the chief metallurgist to King Philip II. I'm 100% sure that it was King Charles V. I don't know if this was a mistake or if he'd been chief metallurgist to more than one king and introduces himself differently each time, possibly. But I'm not going to give the writers of this film enough credit to have thought that one through. So I think they just fucked it up.
I don't think they watched Highlander, the original one.
Even though they made it.
Even though they made it,
sitting phone. You finished that yet?
You finished that yet?
So sure. We find out that the shield isn't needed anymore. They get above the mountains and see that the sky is blue and everything's sound. There's no need for the shield anymore. So all of our main characters come together to destroy the shield, and a few kind of run-ins with Katana and a few other guys on the way. But that's. That's where we're at. Now we get to a scene that stuck out like a sore thumb. Now, you've got Ramirez, you've got Virginia Madsen, whatever her fucking name is, I can't even remember. Is it Alice something? I don't care. I don't care. They end up in this Indiana Jones-style death trap where there's a big fan coming down very, very slowly that's going to chop them all up.
Yeah.
This is them trying to break in and kind of shut down the shield. And as soon as I seen it, I was like, this is fucking Indiana Jones or James Bond. Anything that was popular at the time was referenced in this film.
Which Sean Connery was in, Indiana Jones.
And James Bond. Honestly, man, you had the Total Recall stuff going on earlier on with Ironside. Now you've got the James Bond and Indiana Jones stuff going on with Sean Connery. I mean, thank fuck Mortal Kombat wasn't out by this time.
I'm
sure they'd have had some crazy, crazy shit in there.
Okay, I was just going to say that.
So, Ramirez, to stop this fan from coming down and killing them all, he uses the Force. The quickening. Sorry. Oh. Leave your insults in the comments, but no. he uses the quickening to stop the fan from coming down and push it back up. The funny thing is, it was like they only had one shot to get that kind of happening. So you can see that the fan actually starts moving up, and then he reacts. It's like, oh, it's going up. Oh, I better follow it. So he uses that and sacrifices himself by using the quickening to stop that from happening. He is now gone. He's dead, right? And so that's the last that we see of Ramirez
until we meet again, McLeod.
He's like, will I see you again? He's like, you never know, McLeod. Okay. Thank fuck they don't see each other again. Aww. Anyway, excuse me. I don't know, my throat keeps oh, COVID. Have I got the COVID? I hope not. Or I hope so. Treat it like chicken pox, man. Just get it and get it over with. Anyway, don't shut us down. You can take this bit out. So, I actually didn't give a shit that he died. Yeah, I did give a shit in the first one. I remember actually being quite upset the first time I seen Highlander when I was young and I seen Ramirez get his head cut off. I did not give a shit that he died in this film. Yeah. I did not care. It did not matter to me one iota. Ramirez was there to get this film made. And that's the bottom line. You said it earlier on. Christopher Lambert said, I'm not doing it unless Sean Connery's back. So they wrote him into the film. Right? So then we get to the kind of the final battle, right? The final battle between Katana and McLeod is atrocious. It's a terrible final fight. If you read the IMDb trivia about how Ironside and Lambert do most of their own stunts, right? It tells you about the injuries that they got, blah, 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 blah. What fucking stunts? I've literally looked out the front window and I've seen my kid having better sword fights with his pals than I've seen at the end of this film. It was so clunky and clumsy looking. I genuinely hoped they would both just trip and fall on their own swords at the neck. It's the worst sword fight I've ever seen. Then McLeod uses the quickening again, just like Ramirez did, uses the quickening to destroy the shield. He walks into the middle of the beam that creates the shield, uses the quickening to kill the shield. Does he die? No. Why did Ramirez die then?
Did the thing not come down and crush Ramirez though eventually?
No. But it didn't show you. That's another. It didn't actually show you what happened. He used all of the possible power he could find in the quickening. Now, by rule of thumb, everybody on the planet at that time has the same amount of the quickening in them, right? So, actually, we might have just discovered the answer, because after Sean Connery, after Ramirez died, his power would have went to McLeod. Although we didn't see that, a little scene where he got more of the quickening might have helped that situation and made me work it out before now. But yeah, he's now got Ramirez's power, so now he can survive what he has to do to stop the shield. Anyway, fuck this film. I can't believe you actually like it, man. It makes me question your friendship and this whole podcast.
Well, you see, the thing is, mate, obviously growing up, I've got a bit of a soft spot for these kind of it's so bad that it's good kind of movies. When I watched that as a kid, I didn't technically take in all the logical errors of the story. For me, it was just, here's Connor, and here's a new set of threats, and oh, look, there's Ramirez. And you don't kind of question it when you're a child. So I kind of enjoyed it for what it was, and that was just that it was. But now I love it even so much more because it's given us so much to talk about, and it's given me so much to laugh about. That how can you not just love that absolute piece of work, man? It's just something to behold. You know what I mean?
Do you know what else has got a soft spot?
What?
Babies' heads, and if you poke it, they die. Soft spots aren't always a good thing, man. Sometimes you need to move on, right, and just accept that something is a big steaming hot pile of piss. This film was so bad that even Amazon Prime doesn't have it.
Wow.
It's got every other Highlander film. It does not have Highlander 2. They were like, I'm not paying for that shit.
So on the whole, you don't rate it?
Oh no, 5 out of 5.
Does it deserve the slagging that it got on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't think it's a 0% film, but it's a 10 or 20%. You know, there are elements of it that are enjoyable, but the problem is the source material. It's nothing like the first film, and sometimes that's a decent kind of chance to take when you're making a sequel, is to really kind of deviate from the original. But most of the time, it's not. Very few films have done that successfully. Even Terminator 2, although like obviously Arnold Schwarzenegger is a good guy in the second one, there's still so many elements of it that are similar to the first film that it makes you feel you are watching a film in that franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is with this film, especially with the theatrical cut that originally released, it made them out to be fucking aliens. Come on. Come on. there's no defending decisions as fucking silly as that. And I know that Russell Mulcahy, he has no interest in that film at all. He wanted his name changed in the credit to Alan Smithy.
Alan Smithy.
You know the story behind Alan Smithy. Yeah, most of you movie lovers will know the Alan Smithy thing, but if you want your name to be credited as Alan Smithy, it means you fucking hate the finished product. And he does, and I 100% agree with the person that made the film that it's shit.
Alan Smithy.
Alan Smithy. So, yeah, I think we can leave on the note that it deserved a much better sequel than it got. And to be honest, I don't think it's ever had a sequel that's lived up to its promise. There was rumors of a remake happening recently, of the original Highlander, which could work, if it's done by the right person who loves the source material. But unfortunately, it's probably going to get taken by somebody like Michael fucking Bay, and it's just going to get destroyed.
I just actually received a text there from Todd saying, because when he knew that we were doing this today, he was like, I need to go and watch that. I love Highlander 2. So he went back and watched it. And his text that just went right now reads, forgot how utter batshit awesome Highlander 2 is. I do think the Highlander, there could be more to the Highlander. Who would you have play Connor MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod?
Do you know what? Because I'm a Scottish guy, I'd like to have a Scottish person play Connor MacLeod. And I think that, Ewan McGregor's too old now. So that's a stern pass.
What about WWE's Drew McIntyre?
I don't know enough about the guy. This is you and Todd's territory with your weekly wrestling talk that you have now on the Jibber Jabber logo. with my absolute blessing.
Of course.
Not even joking.
I've
seen the guy, and I do see what you mean. He's really kind of tall. He's over 6 feet long, dark hair. I don't know. He might look too strong.
You know,
that could be the problem, that you wouldn't believe. That was one of the charms of the original one, was the fact that you believed that the Kurgan could destroy him.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you get to play the Kurgan against somebody the size of Drew McIntyre?
Drew should be the Kurgan. Okay, Brock, the thing about the wrestling world is, are they up to the acting chops? But then again, Christopher, no. Some of them are.
I've never seen a good actor come out of wrestling.
Dwayne Johnson, no?
He's a terrible actor.
You think so?
Awful. His films are great, but it's because the films are great. It's not because he made them great. You know, he's kind of similar to Schwarzenegger. It's a kind of package deal. You get the great fun film with the guy that looks amazing but can't act worth shit.
What about...
Schwarzenegger had a few exceptions. There was a few moments say Schwarzenegger's acting that I actually thought was quite decent. Mm-hmm. Films like End of Days and things like that, he was actually quite good in. But
what was the one where his wife and his daughter got smashed up my plane? That was a good one. But
I haven't actually seen that yet.
Oh, mate. Spoiler alert. pretty much.
That happens at the start, I know.
Aye. But did you see Rowdy Piper in They Live, John Carpenter's movie?
I did. Aye. And again, but it fits that role. You know, it's, I'm here to chew bubble gum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubble gum. A wrestler can get away with lines like that. Could you imagine somebody like, I don't know, Al Pacino trying to say something like that? They'd be like, what the fuck are you doing now? But a wrestler saying that, you can get away with it. I don't know if you remember this, just before we move on to Jaws for the second half, we will need a pee break. For the second half of this podcast, we're doing Jaws, but just quickly before we go to that, do you remember something that I just forgot? I've just forgot what I was going to say.
Not really.
Hang on, we talked about Rowdy Piper at They Live. Fuck. Oh, that's what it was. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger passing the torch to Dwayne Johnson. Do you remember this?
Yeah, that was in Welcome to the Jungle or something like that.
It was, man. Mm-hmm. We've never discussed this. I'm glad you know of it. It's Dwayne. Dwayne Johnson's going to a nightclub to kind of handle some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And who walks past him? Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he just walks past him, looks him in the eye and goes, have fun.
That's beautiful.
Awesome pass. It actually gave me goosebumps just talking about it. It was such an awesome passing of the torch. And then The Rock fucked it up by going and doing too many family films right after getting the big torch to do all the action films. And obviously he's redeemed himself since. Some would say, I think most of his stuff is fucking awful. But idiots like it, so I don't know. You're never going to convince people that the Fast and the Furious franchise is a good franchise.
He's done. Hey, I'm sticking up for Jumanji.
I love Jumanji, both of them. They were really good fun. I think I might have actually preferred the second one, which I know a lot of people would argue against that, but I think I did. I think the bad guy, Van Pelt, in the first one was too different to the original one.
Yes,
and I think it kind of took away for that character.
Yeah.
This is a jibber jabber conversation. This is for
absolutely, certain. Absolutely.
We have to do Jaws the Revenge Man. But all in all, I will admit I did enjoy watching Highlander 2. I enjoyed it because I've got half a brain and I'm able to kind of jump in and pick apart these kind of minor or major details that make it the absolute shit show that it is. But I had fun watching it. Would I recommend it? Never in a million years.
I would always recommend it. Always. So
that's what makes this podcast what it is. We don't always see eye to eye.
Exactly. Especially when we're talking about my favourite movies and you're slating them all. Not my favourite, but you can never diss Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod because there can be only one.
That accent as well. There can be only one.
Aye, only one.
There can be only one, you dick.
So we change up gears now and we're going to head to Jaws 4, The Revenge. So we switch it up now to Jaws 4, The Revenge. This came out in 1987. So just to let this kind of sink in a little, the Jaws movie and all the sequels were long done before I was even born, right? And that's something to kind of sit back and take in, because Jaws has always been a part of like things I've watched, where I watched Jaws when I was young. So you assume that Jaws has always kind of been a thing in your time, you know, it was around in your time, but the Jaws series was done before I was even born, you know, and that's something. So so like everybody, I watched Jaws initially as a child, like everyone else. My first memory of watching the actual Jaws movie, I was a kid and my dad had fallen asleep on the couch with me and we were watching something on like Channel 5 initially. And it ended, right? It ended, and then Jaws came on. But my dad was sleeping, so I was like, fuck this, I'll watch this, right? And I remember shitting myself. You know that part? Yeah. This is the first one, right? Do you recall the scene in the first one where they go underwater and that window is like a wee circular window? And you see the body just kind of float. Oh mate, I shit myself. I thought this was just going to be sharks eating folk, man. I wasn't ready for this. Y'all ready for this? So that kind of set me on my Jaws path, and I've obviously watched the sequels, but none of the sequels kind of stick it like Jaws the Revenge. And I remember first time watching it going, what?
even as a kid.
So the premise of Jaws. Lorraine Gary returns as her role to reprise Ellen Brody, right? Which is the wife of Brody. They just call him Brody in the original, right? So she retired after Jaws, right? But then they brought her back for the sequels, and Jaws 4 was the last time she ever acted. She's never done anything since, right? I wonder why. So we already know what Jaws 1, 2, and 3 are about. Shark eating people. How do we get rid of the shark? We kill the shark, right? Not this one. How fresh in your mind is this one, J-Mac?
It's very unfresh. Now, unlike you with the Highlander one, it wasn't one of my favourites when I was growing up because it was shite. So My memory of it is very, very minimal at best. Yeah. No, I remember a couple of things, but it's mainly towards the end of the film. So you're going to need to really fill me in on the juicy details of the awesomeness that is Jaws the Revenge.
The revenge. First off, let's just take a moment and kind of cipher through what that word is. Revenge means someone's done you wrong and you're out for revenge, right?
A shark.
The best.
Get it. I'm gonna get that cut. Get it.
The best of it is, right, is they didn't even dare it into that shark. Apparently, it was his pal. It's not like they like attack that shark. The shark's obviously coming after them because he wanted done to his pal. Loyalty, man. I really hope there's a shark expert watching this, right?
There's a shark posse.
So he must have killed one of the shark's brethren, right?
It's like, what's happening?
Right, let's just look at all possibilities here. Again, I'm sure the same person wrote Highlander 2, right? With no logic whatsoever.
How funny would that be?
I don't know. So three sharks have obviously been done in at this point, right? Because we're on to the fourth movie. Three sharks have been done in. Now, it's not clear which shark was this shark's brethren, right? But they obviously fucked with the wrong shark at some point, right? So,
yeah, just imagine him sitting in his office chair smoking a cigar. They killed fucking who?
Mate, where's the original Jaws set again? Is it New York?
I think it's a Long Island or something like
right,
that.
Right, right, right. So
Amity. Amity.
That's it, right? Amity, yeah. It is. Right, so Brody...
East Coast.
Aye, Brody has now died in the fourth one, right? So he's not alive anymore, so they moved to the Bahamas.
That's a polite way of saying he wouldn't come back and do the fourth one.
Aye, aye. So they moved to the Bahamas, right? The shark follows them to the Bahamas, right? It follows them over 5,000 miles, right?
Yes, it does.
To the Bahamas, where it knows it must. I mean, it must have been hitting up a lot of the letting agencies. Go anybody by the name of Brody?
It's on Fishbook.
Fishbook. So the shark.
It's on Finstagram.
Instagram. It's on Flipper. Oh, right. Composure, Kevin, right. So it's done its research. The shark has done its research and is now following this family to the Bahamas, where, by the way, they're going to Bahamas for a change in scenery, right? They're done with the shark stuff. So where do they move? A beachfront.
Don't move to the mountains. Don't move to Colorado. You know, I don't like sharks, but I still want to see the sea. Jesus.
Right, so they move there, right? And then, so the first death is actually Brody's son. Actually, gets he goes out to the boat, right? Bear in mind, they're here to escape their past, right? He goes out to.
Is it not night?
Yeah, yeah. Is it night?
She lets him go out on the sea at night.
Well, he's an adult, right? Here's the thing, though. Do you know why he's out? It's not even at the sea. It's just literally, you can see where he is from the house. He goes into the water. Do you know why?
Why?
There's logs floating in the water, and he wants to get them out. He wants to take them out.
In case what happens? In case they get a beaver infestation?
Bahamas. So he takes them out, right? And then the shark's like that. That's him.
Hey, mate, that's the guy that killed Joey.
So the shark comes up and takes him
out.
Joey Jaws. So the shark comes up and takes him out, right?
Yeah, he killed Timmy Tuna.
I'm going to stop.
That's good. So he comes up and takes out Brody's son, right? Kills him. And a scene that you can't really see what's happening. You can just see a lot of splashing and blood. And there's a lot of this in it. So that happened, right? He's dead now. And what's her face? Ellen Brody is now, oh no. Right, this movie's very like cryy, very sad. It's always quite grim. It's very quite melancholy. So, and it's also set like not in the summer. It's like winter time. So she's like, oh no. So Michael comes back. That's the other son. He comes, he's like, oh mom, you know, I'm here.
How can I forget?
So he comes back to kind of sort out the affairs of the house and all that because his brother's just died with a shark, right? And get this, you know, she's like, I want to get out of here. That shark has had it in for this family for some time, right? He's like, it wasn't personal.
Why did you say that line?
Right? Especially when you look at the very first Jaws, seeing the very first Jaws movie. They even say, you know, sharks don't take it personally, right? So it kind of contradicts what they said in the first one.
Do you mean that sometimes bad sequels contradict the first one?
Right? But here's the thing.
I see a theme coming.
She's like, nah, that shark's going in for us. And the son's like, are you being serious? She's like, the way it looked at me.
It was raging,
right? And she goes, "I killed your father too." She goes, "Dad had a heart attack." Yeah, through fear of the shark. That shark won't stop until this family ceases to exist. The shark will not
stop. I did not know that sharks were so gangster, man.
Mate, da 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 da. Right, so the shark's there, right? It's followed them from Amityville to the Bahamas, and it's now stalking them. But not only that, just like Highlander 2, the shark and Ellen have a telekinesis connection.
I'm fucking.
come back, right. She's watching the beach, and you hear the, dun-dun. So the shark's in there, right?
The shark's in the water. What's the chances of that shark having a fucking cello?
No. It should have been like boom boom. Lowrider shark. However, it does kind of act like a lowrider because it spends half the movie above the fucking sea, man. It never
bouncing.
It does though. Right? So she's looking out at the sea.
What's that big worm?
So she's looking out at the sea, right? And the sea, and you're hearing it. So you know the shark's in there. And she's like, and together they've got this bond, so she knows when it's there. She just knows when it's there now, right? Michael Caine shows up. He's a daft pilot.
How did that happen, honestly?
It was one of those money movies, and that's all I said. It's based on a money movie. So it's a bit ridiculous. They start to feel like, oh no, you know, the shark.
How are you supposed to blow the bloody jaws off?
Here's the best bit though, right? So Michael meets with a lassie, right? It's kind of his love interest. And he's walking along the beach. He's talking about his, you know, what's going on and how it's causing him issues, right? And then for no reason, starts running across the beach. And she goes, the wee woman that he's with goes, where are you running to? I don't know. Just runs. He just runs for no reason. Absolutely just runs. It makes no sense, right? The shark looks mad.
Angry shark. Right.
Even that though, the way the shark looks, it's quite stupid. It's clearly some sort of robotic shark, and they can only and they can only film it you could, every time you see it, right, it's always filmed to the point where you, underneath the shark's never shown, so it's clearly being operated below the shark, so you only kind of see it. And not only this, right, do you know the opening scene it is the shark approaching the beach, but you're seeing it, the point of view is from the shark's fin. So are we to believe that the shark, are we to believe the shark's face was out of the water as it's moving across, which it does, by the way. This shark spends a lot of time above the water just bobbing. Right,
he's got fucking eyes on his fin there. It wouldn't surprise me.
Fin eyes. So the shark actually looks really fake and stupid.
I do remember that. I remember that detail, and I do remember the fact that it spent a lot of time above water.
It does. And actually, the what do you call it? The lack of suspense and building towards the shark. See, when you're not seeing the water and then you're not seeing the shark, the movie's quite boring. It's like watching an episode of Home and Away. I'm not even joking. It's like watching Home and Away. And then it's like, oh yeah, there's that shark that's got a vendetta against this family. Like, it's not after anyone else, right? So the dialogue is very pointless, right? And obviously Brody's died of a heart attack, right? Go figure. Survived three movies. You'd think if anybody wasn't afraid of a shark, it would be Brody. Right? But we get to all, right? So I'm just going to kind of skip through all the drivelly shite. We're at the point now where she's like, Ken, what? Nah, I'm not taking this shit. This shark's after me. Ken, what I'm going to do? I'm going to get on a boat and I'm going to go to the shark. So she gets on the boat and goes to the shark.
She's don't got no think weapons. About moving inland.
She thing is though, right? Does she have any weapons on her?
No.
What is she gonna do with the shark when she gets there? Right?
So can I talk it down?
So Michael Caine.
Listen, mate. I know you're chasing us because we killed Joey, but he was a dick. Nobody knows this, but he actually bumped my son.
The thing is, right? Michael Caine then takes the rest of the family on a plane to meet her, to save her. What do? They land the plane in the water and then swim from the plane to the boat. So now the plane's away under the water and now they're all on the boat. Oh, and guess what? Here comes the shark. So the shark comes up.
Paycheck. Paycheck.
So the shark comes up, start mauling the boat and typical Jaws fashion, right? And they then go, quick, I've been working on this. This is the guy that's boat that owns the boat. He owns a boat, right? And he's there. He's got a red t-shirt on. And he has this device. is this device, right? And this device is meant for, like, paralyzing sharks in the middle of a shark fight. He's obviously built it himself. So he uses this device to kind of flash the shark.
Why has he got that? Why has he need that?
Well, for this specific scene, right? So this shark...
You used to bring that up!
These gangster sharks, man, that emigrated here for Amityville.
You're at the back of the class next week.
So this shark's here, obviously trying to get his revenge. Right? Is revenge. The revenge. And he's being zapped to the point now that when they zap this shark, he jumps out the water and goes...
Can I just say the only thing scarier than that idea is that noise you just made?
That's the noise. Again.
That sounds like a burp. How do you do that without burping? I can't do it.
Yeah, it's that. Just do it all from the diaphragm. So this shark's like screaming, right? And they're like,
everybody knows that sharks have got multiple layers of vocal cords.
So it's screaming.
What that makes me think is that in every other Jaws film to date, it's actually been the shark that's been making that noise. That's what I'd see if I was a shark. That's what I'd be. You know? if I come back as a shark, I'm making that noise from now until the day that I get impaled on a boat.
and then explode. Like a stick of dynamite, you just explode. Oh, no. Here's the best of it, right? Here's the best of it. So the shark, they're paralyzing the shark, who, by the way, is staying above water like this, right? At no point is it going under the water. It's like this. And it's like, rah, rah. It's still staying like this. Rah.
It's like a T-Rex roar.
Right, yeah. And they're flashing it, and then they come in it with a boat, and the boat goes right into it. And as soon as the boat goes into it, it's like they've just like activated dynamite. The shark explodes. Now, can I just say, like, 4 minutes before this, he was chewing down on the guy that owns the boat, right? So he's taking the guy, and the shark's opening and closing the mouth on this guy, takes him underwater. You can see nothing but blood, right? Trailing behind the shark, right? Then the shark comes back up, gets zapped with electricity, and then a boat hits it and it explodes, and the guy survives.
Wait, how did they explain that away, right?
Right, and then the best thing is, I see what's happening, goes kaboom, and the boat sinks, right? The guy's like, oh, hey guys, no, I saw you.
That was a close one.
I saw you getting eaten. I saw bits of you. I saw you. You went right underwater, and there was blood trails.
That only would have taken one more chomp, and I would have been dead.
Yeah, because being electrocuted and blown up and eaten by a shark, and you still survive. Yes. Oh, he's made of the real stuff, man. He's made of the real stuff. Unbelievable, right? He's still alive. And he literally is just acting like he was like, whoa, guys.
But like he just slipped on ice and stopped himself from falling over. Fucking hell.
He was being chomped. There must have been some internal bleeding there, right? And when he goes under the water, man.
And just so you know, there's some Highlander 2 focus going on with your camera right now.
I can see that. It's because of my laughing, man. So he's been chomped like that scene in Deep Blue Sea, you know, with the lassie under the right, proper. He's being chomped like mad. He's in the shark's mouth. It's like ow, 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 taking him down. Nothing but streams of blood. Then it gets electrocuted and exploded, and he's like, whoa. Good job, none of us were hurt. That's my favourite part.
Do you think it was like a kind of a deliberate kind of fuck you to the establishment by going, haha, you thought we killed the black guy again? Look at this. Because unfortunately at that time it was a typical thing that happened, to be honest. I mean, most of the time, if you had a film like that, whether it be sharks or zombies or fucking vampires, the black guy did always die. It was an unfortunate kind of consequence of making films back then. It was a bit more, it was kind of ignorant, to be honest. Yeah. Whenever you seen a black character in a film back then, you just went, well, he's fucking dead. Yeah. It's just the way it was. And well, again, I go back to what I said about Highlander 2. I'd love to give the writers credit for that, but you just know they didn't think it through as much as we just did.
No. Here's the thing, right? So it's over now. The shark's exploded into tiny pieces. The fella that was just being chomped, electrocuted, exploded, is absolutely fine. Wee bit cut up, wee bit shaken up, but he's all right, right? The shark only like chomped down on him about 10 times, so should pretty much see it through. So the plane that Michael Caine brought in with the rest of the family is now at the bottom of the sea, right? And the boat is now at the bottom of the sea because the front half of the boat ripped off with a shark. That's what killed the shark, right? When obviously there must have been TNT in it or something, right? So they now don't have a plane or a boat. And they're all like, oh, that was class. Good, happy ending, right? They're all stuck in the middle of the sea paddling. Right, including the guy that's just been chomped to fuck. I bet you he's in no position to swim.
if he survived that, all he has to do is hang on to the back of whatever they left floating on and kick his legs, and they're getting home. That guy can survive anything. He's fucking superhuman. He's got two Honda engines as each foot. That's
mate, they're all kicking about in the middle of the sea like, whew, that was great, we're all safe. I'm like,
the
fuck no.
Kicking about in the middle of the sea is how a lot of kind of modern horror films start, not end.
It's like
could you imagine like a movie where, I don't know, you've been running away from like a killer bear or something, right? Mm-hmm. And then you walk up to the Bates Motel and get inside and go, fuck exactly. For that.
Exactly.
And then the film finishes.
Oh man. Thing is though, they're like, oh, that, thank God that's done. They're all kind of just paddling, like, oh, we don't need a lot of energy anyway, right? Did they send out a distress call or something? Like, who's coming to get them? Because seeing the very next scene, they're all back on land.
Maybe the sea drained.
Probably.
The sea drained and they landed on where they're meant to be. Like, ah, that's fine, that's fine.
They just, you know, Michael Caine went down to the bottom of the sea, got his plane back. You know what I mean?
Michael Plane.
Exactly. So
I'm pushing it now. Like
there's a lot of flawed logic in this. I'd have just called it Jaws 4 Gangster Fish.
Sharknado 10.
Mate, one day when we get the budget right, we will make a badass shark movie. Right? The intellectual shark.
Nah, when the time comes, we are making a top class psychological horror. That's what's coming. That's
including
for the Jibber Jabber.
Yeah, and a shark will be in it.
And a picture on the wall.
And a picture.
We don't have that much of a budget.
the shark, hey, it's the same shark from Shark 4, Jaws 4, The Revenge. And the shark picture uses its telekinesis, which it does have, by the way, to fuck with you.
That's fucking fact alone. The fact that the shark has got telepathic powers.
mate, I've just realised Ouija Shark is Jaws 5.
it might well be. In fact, no, it's the ghost of the shark from the first Jaws. That's what it is. I like your thinking there.
But did they all have telekinesis, or was it just Jaws 4 Shark?
It was just Jaws 4 Shark. I mean, there's no defending Jaws 4, but I'm thinking that the Ouija Shark, it has to be the strongest of all the sharks.
It has to be
the first one.
I don't know.
It has to be the first one.
I mean, see if you let's wait up here, right? If we're going for a tail of the tape, right? Jaws 1 Shark was just quite generic shark, eventually died. Original Jaws Shark, very generic shark, ate people, died. Jaws 4 Shark is an investigator. Right,
he's a PI.
He's a tracker, right? He's got telekinesis, right? He doesn't forget. He has a unique set of skills.
He should work in insurance claims, man.
I'm sorry, but I'm calling it. Jaws 4 Shark is far superior to Jaws 1 Shark.
Jaws 4 is the Darth Vader of sharks.
Isn't he? He's gangster. Da 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 da. You know, how cool would it be, mate? No, we should do. We should take that movie, right? Take all the shots from it and rework it, right? To the point where it's just a shark going on, like, have the shark being gangster shark from his perspective, and we'll create the Brody family as the bad guys.
that's an animation waiting to happen.
Oh, mate, that could happen.
All right, Scott, you're the man. Come on.
I think we could do it with just by